Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Friday, March 10th, 2017. The time is 9:08 a.m. If you're joining us off net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, the state capitol, room 532, Senate Finance. I'm co-chairman Anna McKinnon. With me at the table, co-chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning, Madam
Chair. Senator Michicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin today's agenda? Seeing and hearing none, on today's agenda is Senate Bill 26. It's an act relating to an appropriation limit relating to budget responsibilities of the governor relating to Alaska Permanent Fund, the earnings of the Alaska Permanent Fund and the earnings of the reserve account relating to the Mental Health Trust Fund, relating to deposits into the dividend fund, relating to the calculation and payments of the permanent fund dividend, and providing for an effective date. This bill is a CS that's been adopted. We've covered the changes. First, I'd like to go over the fiscal notes, if we could, so that everyone is familiar with the fiscal notes on this. I'd like to ask Jerry Burnett to join us at the microphone, and the Commissioner Randy Hoffbeck. Senator Bishop, if you could start us through the fiscal note number one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fiscal note number one, Senate Bill 26, Department of Administration, appropriation is the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, allocation, Violent Crimes Compensation Board, OMB component number is 2694. That's a zero fiscal note from 18 through 23. And there, the backup on the back page, this is, it's a zero fiscal note. And the Violent Crimes Compensation Board currently receives an annual appropriation from the permanent fund dividend, and it's in a zero appropriation. Fiscal note number two, there is SB 26, Department of Corrections, appropriation is health and rehabilitation services. The allocation is for physical health care. The OMB component, excuse me, is 2952, and it is rounded up to $9 million going through 2019 and $8 million in change from 2021 through 2022. Using the Office of Management and Budget Projection Model and the same number of individuals identified as ineligible, this legislation would adjust the amount of the PFD criminal funds available for allocation.
Fiscal note number three, Commissioner Hoffbeck, Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
For the record, Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. Fiscal note number three is a fiscal note that was done for by Taxation and Treasury Tax Division that shows a change from UGF to non-UGF as a result of the 5.25% draw and the reduction in the funding going to the principal of the permanent fund from the change of the bill that changes from the 50% back to the constitutional 25%. So it reflects a change of revenue in the first in FY18 of $2,587,900,000 as UGF, which was non-UGF, and a reduction of an equivalent amount in UGF going out to the first 3 years that roughly matches the CS. This fiscal note will need to be updated for fiscal years FY21, 22, and 23. As a result of the changes in the CS, the numbers will change.
Questions from committee members? Moving on to fiscal note number four, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Department is Department of Revenue. Appropriation is Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Allocation is the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation investment management fees. OMB component number is 2310. And that is a zero fiscal note from 18 through 23, ma'am.
Fiscal note number five.
Thank you. Department fund capitalization appropriation is caps spent as duplicated funds. Allocation is the crime victim compensation fund. OMB component number is 2936. Again, that's 2936, and that's also a zero fiscal note.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, Deputy Commissioner Burnett, fiscal note number six.
Yeah, fiscal note number six, DORPF permanent fund earnings. It's permanent fund ERA appropriation to allocation to general fund. It reflects the change of funding direct the permanent fund dividend fund directly from the permanent fund earnings reserve to now funding it from the general fund after the draw has been made from the general fund, and reflects the change in the dividend amount, limiting it to a $1,000 dividend in the first for the first 2 years in this fiscal note. And then the fiscal note before you shows the 2020 calculation. We will need to update that for the CS to show the 25% of draw calculation for years to 2021 and out.
Thank you very much. Questions from committee members on the fiscal note? Seeing and hearing none, if you could remain at the table, I'd like to get into the heart of the bill. Are there amendments to the CS for Senate Bill number 26? We did not receive anything to our office yesterday. Seeing no amendments, is there discussion on the bill? Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a few questions, or at least clarifications, regarding the bill that I'd like to get on the record. And Madam Chair, I'll direct it through you, and if the gentleman can help with the answers, that would be great. And I just want to get on the record. So under this bill, the POMV take is 75% would go into the Treasury and 25%, well, all would go into the Treasury, but 75% would be retained within the Treasury and 25% would go out as a dividend for the people, correct?
Commissioner Hoffbeck.
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Can you or can someone explain to me why the term transfer was eliminated in the bill and other bills and changed from transfer to appropriation?
Senator Dunleavy, I followed up with my staff on that question, and I was told that it was a technical amendment for consistency in state statute, that it does not change the authority of the governor to veto, nor affect that. It's a legal, technical change.
Okay, and so, Madam Chair, so it does not change the nature of the dividend or its relationship with the permanent fund, et cetera, et cetera?
No.
Okay. Another question for the Chair. I just want to make sure the dividend will be $1,000 for the next 3 years under this bill?
To the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct.
Thank you. Since this is a statute, a law, it's not constitutionally protected, and so the ERA is still open potentially for future legislatures to go in and take more out of the ERA than, let's say, is fiscally prudent. In other words, there are it's on the record. So, for example, the House is anticipating or hoping to move billions of dollars out of the ERA. This bill does not necessarily prevent that from happening because it is a statute. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct. What this does is it puts a structure around the use of the earnings reserve so that that there's a plan so that it doesn't overdraw on the earnings reserve. But it is statutory, and the legislature still has the power of appropriation.
Next question, and I think it's going to be the last for now, is in this bill there's a mechanism that when oil revenue grows, hopefully it does, and it can get, it theoretically correct me if I'm wrong, it can get to a point where there's no longer a need for a draw on the permanent fund, a dollar for dollar, if it keeps going up. We don't know what's going to happen in the world in the next couple of years. So theoretically speaking, we could get to a point where there's so much oil revenue that there's no draw on the permanent fund. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is correct.
Okay. If that's correct, does that have an impact on the dividend? If there's nothing coming out of the permanent fund, would the dividend itself go to zero if the draw is zero?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the dividend is calculated on the maximum draw, and so the reduction in the amount used for government services would not affect the size of the dividend.
So you could have zero coming out for the government, but you're still going to be issuing a dividend?
That is correct.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, I'll save my comments for later when we're trying to move the bill.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to dovetail on the question that Senator Dunleavy has, as you say, there is a dividend that's still going to be there. What's going to be the flavor of it? Is it going to be more, less, the same? Or what you're thinking is oil revenues come back?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, of course, the first 3 years is $1,000. As oil revenues increase, if they actually trip the provision where it starts reducing the size of the draw for government services, that will increase the size of the permanent fund. It will increase the earnings and will increase the size of the dividend over time. In general, the dividend will grow, even under the projections. It grows to, I think, over the 24 years, it went from $1,000 forecasted to like $1,600, even within the life of the projections. But, of course, those are 24 years out. A lot can change between now and then. But the idea is it will be around $1,000.
No further questions this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Much has been said about the draw and whether or not that amount of draw is too high. I don't think. And that appears on page 3, section 7. And I wonder if the commissioner could speak to that issue.
To the chair, Senator Olson, there was extensive modeling done to determine what the maximum draw that could be made for use of paying the dividend and paying for government services and still protect the corpus of the fund and allow it to grow at a rate of inflation over time. The drill that we asked when we actually did the modeling was to try and make as much money available as possible through this particular tool. So the 5.25% was the limit that we felt was that we could push as far as a draw over time. This bill has a turn down after 3 years down to a 5% draw, which adds a little bit of a more conservative nature to this. And it also, there's a review so that we will also review this periodically anyway. If we see that we're drawing too much, we will come back to the legislature and say that the draw is starting to deplete the corpus of the fund and recommend changes. So the idea isn't to put this in place and just let it sit for 20 years. It will be monitored to make sure that it doesn't impact the value of the fund over time.
Well, the question, I guess, I haven't heard this from the department before. If you feel that the draw is too high in the future, you would come back to the legislature for an adjustment. I wonder if you could expound upon that point a little further.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes. The intent here is to put in place a system for use of the earnings reserve and in a sustainable fashion. But if at any point in time that we feel like it's become non-sustainable, or even if the legislature feels like it's non-sustainable, we would come back with recommendations for adjustments in order to make that sustainable over the long term. And one thing to point out, the draw itself at the 5.25, if you actually, since it's 5.25 against 5 of the prior 6 years, the net draw is really more around 4.7%. and that's well within the range of what I think people have felt is a sustainable draw. But if for some reason markets adjust dramatically and we don't have returns over time, we will come back, because the idea is that the permanent fund is to be multi-generational. In order for that to occur, we have to let it grow with inflation.
But in the modeling that was produced, has the fund ever failed?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the modeling under this particular bill had less than a 1% failure rate, so that the that essentially says no, it will not fail.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, is it true that after the administration calculates the draw, that it's up to the legislature to actually appropriate the money?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
And so if there were any, the legislature, without any additional change to statute, would be prudent with those transfers?
Madam Chair, that is the assumption, that the legislature will be prudent with the use of this.
So it could be fair to say that it's an up-to amount, because the legislature has to make those transfers each year?
Madam Chair, that's the intention, that we feel like this is the maximum you should draw, but certainly you can draw less.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The concern I have, Commissioner Hoffbeck, is from the constituents that I represent, is that there won't be the political will to go ahead and even identify that the draw is too high. And as we look at the administration is going to be changing, commissioners are going to be changing, and the mindset that's out there will be different than it is right now. And so to say that it's going to be realized the draw is too high is one thing to say, but it's hard to go ahead and have the political will to do. We realize that, you know, we're all subject to what the people are voting. We're all there trying to make sure that politically we're doing the right thing to either stay in the job that we are or do whatever else. So the concern I have is that we will not have the concern that my constituents have, and I do too, there won't be the, as I put it, the political will to go ahead and say, yes, we do have something that's too high, we need to cut it back. How can we guarantee those concerns out there?
The Chair, Senator Olson, I think the best way to address that is just history. The earnings reserve has always been available for appropriation, and for over 30 years, the legislature has followed the statutes which dictated the use of the earnings reserve for dividends and inflation proofing and the rest remaining in the earnings reserve. And for 30 years, the legislature has not tapped that for additional funding. And so I think that's probably the best answer, is that the legislature has showed prudence in the past as far as the use of these funds.
No further question, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Through the Chair, I do appreciate the discussion that we're having with the draw rate, and I understand that 5.25 has been modeled and it shows that it works over time. I do also want to just point out that it does put pressure on the permanent fund to generate returns in excess of that, and in down markets it's difficult to do. I do want to say, of course, the mental health trust has a much lower draw, and that's been put in place at about 4.5%, I believe. Even 25 basis points of 0.25%, the time value of money does make a difference over time. And I just want to state for the record that I think that 5.25, I understand the reasonings behind it, because it helps reduce the deficit. I believe it's on the high side, and I would feel more comfortable with maybe 4.75. But I understand the reasonings that the bill is in this place, that the bill is at 5.25 at this time. But I just wanted to kind of state that. The second provision that I have a couple questions about is Section 7C, when we have the instituting the $1 decrease on the POMV draw for each dollar oil revenue is over $1.2 billion. I understand that this is an inflation-proofing mechanism, that it does allow more money to go back into the fund over time, but I question this, because aren't we, in essence, trying to diversify our revenue sources, and doesn't this somewhat sort of keep us dependent on oil again, in theory? I feel that the spending cap provision in this bill keeps the operating budget in check, and that in the event that oil revenue does increase again, we can utilize that for capital, for deferred maintenance that Senator to my left here has talked about on so many times, PERS and TERS, which is not getting any easier to address over time, and things of that nature. So that's my concern, and if you would like to address that, that would be great.
To the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the initial reason, the primary reason for the dollar for dollar reduction, once you have $1.2 billion in oil and gas tax and royalty revenue, is to essentially take volatility out of the revenues available for government expenditures by beginning to turn the use of the earnings reserve off when it's no longer necessary in order to fund government services. You prevent this issue of superheating government expenditures, where if oil and gas revenues increase to the point where they were able to support government services on their own, and then you add another $1.5 billion or $2 billion on top of that with earnings reserve draw, now you've superheated your expenditures, and something that at some point in time you'd have to pull back from again. So what this does is actually just prioritizes which money gets spent at a time where you have excess revenues, and it says the oil and gas tax revenues would be spent first before and you would stop spending the earnings from the permanent fund when you had enough money to fund government services without needing both in their totality.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I just feel that the provision inside the bill with the spending cap does help us from superheating, particularly at least the operational part. I have concerns, again, that we are leaving a potential liability on the table with huge debt, with PERS and TERS, potential capital deferred maintenance, which could yield more problems over time. But there's no need to respond. I just wanted to state that for the record, and thank you.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair. Just going back to the brief discussion that Senator Olson had with yourself, Commissioner, about guarantees for the people, and you mentioned that over the decades we have not gotten in the ERA. Previous to that, we talked about how we can easily walk into the ERA. We can just ignore our statutes. And so, and again, it's not directed at anybody. It's just that decades-old understanding or relationship ended this year. It's done. And how is it done? Because currently the House is looking at shifting billions out. Under the governor's bill, there was talk of shifting billions out. So, I mean, I would contend that relationship, that understanding, that pact, however you want to word it, is over. And the reason I say that is because, as you know, and others know, I've been touting that we just stick with the status quo and go with the 50-50 concept, at least for the next couple of years. But I'm not trying to be silly, but I've become convinced after looking at these attempts to get in the ERA that it's not protected. And that the only way you're ever going to protect this fund is if you constitutionalize it. This is not you again, Commissioner. But quite frankly, the people are at our mercy. If we don't want to follow our statutes, they're at our mercy. And the times throughout the history of the state, when I think the people really wanted to make a statement and protect things, they created the permanent fund. They created the CBR. They created the appropriation limit. And I'll end it with this. That's really the only thing that's going to save the people, quite frankly, from us, is themselves through these constitutional amendments. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I'm going to be, but I don't think these statutes are going to protect the permanent fund. There's been too much activity to try to get into that permanent fund the past 2 years, and I think that understanding is gone. And we're just going to have to move forward, I think, and work on a constitutional amendment probably as soon as possible for the people of Alaska to say what they want this fund to look like going forward.
Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we are it markup on the legislation, and I know the commissioner has already testified, but I think it would be prudent to address the two points that have major concern by the public, the people of Alaska. And in your presentation, you talked about on page 11 the protection of the dividend, and on page 12 protection of the fund. And I think it would be wise for you to address those two specific points, because they are critical to this particular piece of legislation, and the people of Alaska need to hear what the Commissioner of Revenue has to say about those two particular points, the protection of the dividend and the protection of the fund.
Commissioner Hoffbeck.
The Chair, Senator Hoffman. Just to step back for a second and then move forward. We've done over 500 presentations around the state talking about the fiscal situation the state is in. And a couple of things that people have made very clear to us is that they see the permanent fund as a multi-generational fund that needs to be protected. And secondly, that they felt that the dividend at some level needed to be protected as well. And so those were very, very much front and center in developing the Permanent Fund Protection Act. As the plan is structured, and the way it was modeled, as far as the fund itself, it was modeled at such an extent that it would grow with the rate of inflation or greater, so that in fact the buying power of the permanent fund would not be reduced over time, and that our kids and our grandkids and our great grandkids would have the same benefits from this fund that we do now. So that was one of the primary goals. The second was that we needed to preserve a dividend. And when we modeled the status quo and we looked at what would happen if we just simply went from spending the way we are now and using the Constitutional Budget Reserve to fund the gap, and then when the Constitutional Budget Reserve was gone, to start using the Earnings Reserve to fund the gap with no structure around it, that at within 4 to 5 years, we would deplete the Earnings Reserve to the point where it would start to impact the size of the dividend, and essentially the dividend would go away over a couple-year period of time. And that we felt that it was it addressed what we heard in traveling around the state for a smaller dividend, but a dividend that would last into perpetuity as well, rather than a status quo dividend that would last for another 4 or 5 years at max and then be gone in its entirety.
Senator Hoffman.
I think the point that I take is that if we do not take action, the dividend would go away. And that, I think, is a point that many people are concerned about. So by inaction by the legislature, either through a structure that we have in Senate Bill 26 or another form, the people of Alaska could potentially have no dividend. And that gives me great concern.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, why will the dividend go away? I've had people ask me that over and over and over again, and I think there are some assumptions embedded in that. If you could explain the assumption, why will it go away? Mathematically, mechanically, it's never gone away before. Why would it go away?
Mr. Hoffbeck.
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy. The idea is that we have to pay our bills. And so at some point in time, the CBR will be depleted, and we would start using earnings reserve. As we start to spend down the earnings reserve, we start spending the money that not only pays for government services but pays for the dividend as well. And when we got to the point where it was a matter of do you pay a dividend or do you pay your bills, that we would be in a situation where we would have to pay our bills, and then the dividend would not be paid.
And Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and I think that is the explanation, and it's very helpful. The dividend would go away because of our actions at this table as politicians to deal with the budget, not because there's a mechanical flaw or a mathematical flaw. It's simply because we would want to go to that fund because it may be easier to go to than, let's say, impose a tax on the people of Alaska, which that should be very difficult. That's a topic for another conversation. But so the reason the dividend could go away is because we'd merely go into the ERA and just spend it. is the assumption that we're talking about.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that's correct. We've looked at it and we thought, if you've got a, let's just say you've got a $1 billion deficit, and you have three options. One is that you raise $1 billion in new revenues through taxes, you cut $1 billion out of government spending, or you take $1 billion out of your savings, in this case the earnings reserve, that the one that's would be the easiest would be to use your savings. And that's why we felt like no structure around the use of the earnings reserve is the biggest threat to the durability of the earnings reserve, because the unplanned draws are really where the threat is of depletion.
I appreciate that. And, Madam Chair, just one last question.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you. You had mentioned your travels around the state the past 2 years, and you've had a lot of meetings. Is the feeling that you get that the people of Alaska will support this bill through those travels and through those meetings?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, yes. And when people understand the decisions that is in front of this body and why this is occurring, they have been very supportive of it. And we walk into the meetings and people are sitting there with their arms crossed. And by the time they understand the situation, they're going, we understand that something needs to be done. So I think it really is a matter of people understanding that nobody came here with the idea of let's cut the dividend or let's cut government expenditures or let's impose a new tax. It's just the fiscal situation that we're facing and the decisions that need to be made. And I think when people understand it, they've been very supportive of the idea that this has to be part of the solution.
Promise, just one last follow-up.
Senator Dunleavy.
So with that said, and your meetings with the people and the feeling you've gotten from them, would you support this going out to a vote for the people, of the people? Because if it went out for a vote of the people, they would support this bill.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, as I said, when we walk into the meeting, people's arms are crossed, and by the time we leave, because they have the information. I think there's a real concern that the people would have the necessary information to be able to evaluate the use of the earnings in this fashion, and so we felt like the legislature has the greatest amount of information. They have the greatest idea of what they're facing and are in the best position to make the decision on the proper use of the earnings reserve to balance the state's fiscal situation. The reality is if you went out and you got a public vote that said don't use the earnings reserve, and then you had $1 billion that you had to fill in the gap and you had to use the earnings reserve, what would be the result? I think it would create even more controversy rather than less. And so we feel like the information, we've traveled the state, we've got the information out there, there's a general consensus that something needs to be done, and that it needs to be done here and now.
So you would not advise that we go out to advise your vote for the folks of Alaska to confirm what we're doing here at this table?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we think the decision needs to be made now.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Commissioner Hoffbeck, thank you for this past year for going out and talking with the public and explaining to them about the permanent fund and all the mechanisms. I really appreciate that. I feel that there is more understanding and engagement by the entire state of Alaska in the last couple years than there has been in a long time, and that's largely due to your efforts and your department. Thank you. There has been, because we are marching towards our first official draw, potentially, from the earnings reserve, there are some concerns about is this the first of many potential draws, and what's going to happen to the ERA, the earnings reserve account, over time. I think that some of the best way to protect the fund and to avoid some extra appropriations that I think the senator to my right has been discussing, as well as help grow it over time and to reach its maximum value, which I'd like to say could result in a higher dividend over time, it should be structured like the many, many other foundations and endowments that are around the world, which has been recommended by the board, the permanent fund board, about 10 years ago. The fund should be one large fund, and not two funds. Approximately one-fifth, more than one-fifth of the fund is in the ERA, earnings reserve account. If we start appropriating from that fund, that earnings reserve account most likely will be invested differently in order to maintain its liquidity. And I think that by having it that way, we leave a lot of money on the table. So I just wanted to reiterate what Angela Rodell indicated earlier when she said that the board did say that the tried and true mechanism that has been performed over has been successful over the course of time is having one large endowment and managed appropriately to meet the draw, the annual draw that's been set up for that particular endowment or fund. And then that way they can capture as much of the return, the investment return, the inflation proofing within their set of investments. And we leave the least amount of money on the table. So I just wanted to state that for the record and kind of capture the conversations that we've had among others over the last week or so. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Senator Hoffbeck.
Madam Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, just a couple of things. First of all, although the permanent fund has a distinction between the principal of the fund and the earnings reserve, it is managed as one large fund. I mean, there is no distinction between the way those particular pieces of the fund are invested. So even though there's a statutory construct that creates those two different pieces of the fund, the investment has not changed historically because of that. You make a point. I mean, you could avoid the earnings reserve piece of this entirely and just go to straight POMV 5.25% of the full value of the fund. And that was considered when we first looked at structuring the bill. But we felt like there was a certain amount of security people had with the earnings reserve, and that if we had gone entirely to the full POMV model, that people would feel like that somehow would lessen the security of the fund. And so we didn't go that far with what we had laid out in our plan. But certainly it's a step that could be taken. It would do no harm to the plan. Could be incorporated if people felt that was the right way to do it. As far as investing is concerned, and I've spoken with Director Rodell about this, and we believe that we can set up a construct within, because the cash management will still be reside within the Department of Revenue, within our Treasury Division. We can use the CBR as a liquidity bank as far as paying for bills during the year, and then as the fund realizes gains, then they would make their annual transfer to us, so that they in fact would not have to increase the liquidity within the permanent fund in order to make those transfers. We would handle it on the Treasury side, and as long as we pay back the CBR within the fiscal year, then we're within the statutory authority of using the CBR. And so we think we can create a structure around the use of the permanent fund and a model for how the payments are made, such that the permanent fund would not have to make changes to their investment policies in order to meet that. And again, and the beauty of this is using five of the prior 6 years, they would know at the beginning of a fiscal year how much their draw was going to be, and they could plan accordingly.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Olson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've already told you about what my constituents think about tinkering with a PFD and the draw may be too high and whatever else. But I guess as public policy makers, we here at the table, as well as the administration, is there a concern that the earnings reserve will be the only resource that's going to be tapped for the fiscal gap that we're now facing, and that without some type of comprehensive broad-based tax that will not be added and therefore we'll be only looking at the earnings reserve?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson. The governor has made it clear that he feels like we need to have a a comprehensive plan to get to a fiscal solution. There's a lot of ways to get there, and that's why he said it was written in pencil. The governor has certainly indicated that he preferred a revenue solution to closing the rest of the gap. There's others that prefer reducing expenditures to get to the gap. Either one works. They work the same. It's just a matter of what the political preference is to get there. And the idea is to do it and do no more harm than we have to do to the economy with the decisions that we make. And so we do need a full fiscal solution because, as I said, unearned or unplanned draws are the biggest threat to the fund. I think people can be comfortable that there'll be more than just this one piece. What the other pieces look like is still, a work in progress.
With all due respect, Madam Chair, if I could continue.
Senator Olson.
With all due respect, Commissioner, in reality, I don't see on this side of the bodies any other comprehensive plan besides looking at the earnings reserve account. And so although you're optimistic about that happening, I guess I'm not quite there, and neither are my constituents. Do you have a comment to that? You don't have to have a comment. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing from my standpoint, and therefore grave reservations are welling up within me.
Madam
no
Chair.
Further questions, Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Through the Chair, Senator Olson. There's a lot of discussions that are still occurring. I think it would be premature to say that this was it. We're still going under the assumption that there will be a fiscal plan when it's all said and done, and the legislature will develop the plan that it's comfortable with and roll it out. So,
other questions? We've talked about this at the table before. And Alaskans are becoming more engaged all the time about the challenges that Alaska are facing with the huge loss in revenue from a lack of price as well as production on our North Slope. Alaska has been fortunate for over 30, 35 years to have one source of revenue that is extremely volatile maintain services across our state. But we have a problem in that the production is very different than it was when the price was $9 a barrel many years ago. The production was significantly higher. And now we have two troubles in a volatile commodity that is price and production. And as I understand it, production is hovering around 500,000 barrels a day, which is up from last year. And we hope with the news that we received yesterday and that we've seen over the past that production or the decline of production has been reversed based on policies that the past legislatures have supported. But we have a problem, and the problem that faces each of us at this table and in communities across Alaska is that we've been drawing from our savings. This year, it will be the sixth year that we've drawn from our savings, and we've lost the opportunity for those savings to generate revenue that could have benefited Alaska that now is in conversation on different taxes, different ways that we use our earnings. We could wait, but there is a cost to waiting, and we've been waiting for 5 years now in hopes that we would see revenue turn up. I guess that wait has been about 3 years, that the oil price would recover substantially. The people of Alaska have been, from my community, shouting for reductions in government, that we need to cut government. And if we were just one individual, we probably could cut much more to respond to the requests from the people of Alaska. But those cuts that we've been considering impact different geographic districts that are represented by people at this table and in the other body. And so it becomes the challenge for any cuts on 11 senators agreeing with the cuts, 21 representatives, and a governor that's not in opposition and will let that law go into effect or that cut to take place. So we've depleted our savings. We've lost about $200 million of earning potentials by going through those savings. I believe upwards or in the neighborhood between $10 and $12 billion have been used up to today. Through cooperation, collaboration, and all-out warfare between the two bodies, we've cut 26% out of the operating budget, reoccurring expenses reduced. In total, with the capital budget, we've drawn down government spending by 44%. But additional laws need to be changed. We can't go in and arbitrarily, without consequence, legally, to the state of Alaska and to the people and communities across Alaska to just not fund some items. We can go into gridlock, and that gridlock has cost us money before and continues to cost us money in a variety of forms. Some of those form is long-term borrowing opportunities for the state of Alaska and for smaller communities across Alaska. What I'm talking about is a downgrade in credit rating. The state could cost shift and charge municipalities more money. And in the end, what happens to my community in Chugiak, Eagle River, Peters Creek, Jay Bear, our communities then would start trying to charge our property taxpayers more money. That's my opinion. That's my assertion. So we've faced and received several downgrades, and we're on the block again as national credit rating agencies are waiting for us to act and not wait. I've been told from our Labor and Commerce Committee that one in every $3 that is spent at a local level, that would be my municipality, your municipalities, villages, corporations, one in every $3 of local government is coming from the state of Alaska. Some people across our state believe that they don't need state services. They may forget that they travel on roads that cost large amounts of money to clear and maintain. We travel on airports that are maintained with some state funding. Ports, ferries, emergency services, firefighting, emergency evacuation. We're a large state. We don't have counties, and the state has been the holder of those responsibilities for years. I've heard about taxes, that taxes need to be part of the solution, and I adamantly disagree. The plan before you for consideration today closes Alaska's fiscal gap. It maintains downward pressure to cut the budget and right-size the government for the people of Alaska. The people in urban communities are paying for a portion of their shared services already. They are looking at rural Alaska, and my community is saying rural Alaska is not contributing what they should towards education, the largest single cost driver for the state of Alaska. $1.3 billion is spent by our state to help lift people up, students and families, out of poverty so that they can achieve their life dreams. $1.3 billion. Urban communities with taxing powers are contributing to that. Rural communities have that benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, before us today is one way. There are many to close our fiscal gap. I ask for your consideration in considering this bill. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that, is there additional discussion? Maybe there would be after the motion is made. But I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 26 Finance 30-GS 1690/D from the committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, including, I believe, a few that are coming from the committee with to the next committee of referral.
I object for purposes of discussion.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I agree with much of what you just said. I think taxes will be the death of Alaska's future. It's already incredibly difficult to live here in terms of cost of living. Sometimes we forget when we move from Chicago or Florida, if we're not an individual that's been born here, that
you know, it's everything, all the costs are the same. They're not. Your medical costs are greater here. Transportation, food costs are greater here. And then when you move out to the rural parts of the state, it's unbelievable. It's just very difficult to live here. And so you add a tax on this situation. I believe, I'm not sure if it was Forbes, I'm trying to remember exactly where I saw this recently, but Alaska is about 47th in terms of expense, in terms of living expenses in a state. That's before there's any taxes. The moment you put a tax on this place, and this is what I want people to realize, you're going to push us above 51, and you're going to cause some of the most productive people there are to leave this state. Why do I say that? Our state's in recession right now. That's a fact. We have the highest unemployment rate in the country. That's a fact. We've shed thousands of high-paying jobs, which would be part of that tax base that people are contemplating we're going to tax. They're going. South Dakota has an unemployment rate of 2.4%. Ours is over 7, I believe, at this time. It was 6.8, 6.9 just a few months ago. It's about 7. So anyone that really thinks that taxes are going to get you through this thing, you might get an early quick fix, but over time, you're going to have a slow death of this state. And I doubt very much you're going to have industries that are going to want to set up concrete in this state if they believe that, again, we are a government that's predatory and that we cannot control our spending and that we must grow and that it's difficult to cut. I mean, we hear this over and over and over again. So I would agree with that, that you impose a tax on this state, it's doomed, period. With regard to this bill, you know, there are philosophical differences, and some of us disagree with the bill. I'm one. This is no surprise to anyone. And part of it is, though, I mean, I'm looking at the private economy as well, and that's not in these discussions. I'm not saying it's being shorted on purpose, but believe it or not, we do have a private economy. And these are rough numbers, but I just want to go over a couple numbers here. Last year, approximately $660 million was vetoed from the PFD. This year, approximately, and these numbers, I'll say this on the record, I hastily put these numbers together. They could be off, and if they are, I'll be the first to be stand corrected. But in 2017, we're probably looking at $700 million less in the dividend if it was if the changes go through. And then going forward another year, another $700 million. That's approximately, that's over $2 billion out of the private economy that goes into the government. Put this in perspective too. That's going to be about 30 over those 3 years. That's going to be about $3,600 less per individual to be able to spend the way they want in the private economy. This is a real sobering number. If you have a family of five over that 3 year period, it's about $18,000 less. That's going to hurt the private economy. So we have a private economy that's in recession. We're going to be taking more money out of it for government. And a number of the assumptions I've heard over and over and over again, and you have too, Madam Chair, members of this committee have, is we just can't cut. I have to give credit to the Senate Finance Committee for the past several years. And it's not pandering to my fellow members on this committee, but I can recall just a few years ago, we out of the subcommittee work we did, we had cut about $970 million. $970 million people at this table cut. We sent it over to the other body, and just the way it works, you have 61 people, compromise, et cetera, et cetera. That was beaten back by about $250 million, maybe $300 million. I agree with you. It takes 61 people to come to agreement, or it's very difficult for something to happen. I become somewhat frustrated, for example, when the administration comes to the table and they want more money in their supplementals. They're going in a whole different direction. And I need people to think about something. If you do some runs looking out 10 years, because of the, quote, normal growth in the budgets of about $80 to $100 million, you could potentially be looking at $1 billion additional spend, even if we don't add any significant programs. In other words, Madam Chair, if we don't cut and if we don't cap our operating budget, there is really no tax base out there that will catch the expenditures that are projected. That's a fact. And although this is called a plan, and I understand why, it's really one component of a larger discussion that needs to be put in place. We can't catch our expenditures. Even under this plan, there will be a gap of several hundred million dollars that has to be closed. And we can avoid the cut, the reductions. I mean, I was told the other day, don't use the word cut because it offends somebody. Okay. I guess we're in this politically correct world. You can't use cut reductions or shrinkage or something else. But the long story short is we're starting out by asking the people of Alaska to pitch in and at this stage of the game, as we talk today, to bear the brunt of trying to solve this fiscal issue. I think the private economy is gotten whacked, and it's going to be in trouble. I think we have to reduce this budget significantly. And quite frankly, I mean, collectively, over the past 40 years, or when Prudhoe Bay started pumping, collectively, not pointing at folks sitting here today and myself, we're all part of this, though, but collectively, in many respects, we failed the people of Alaska over the last 40 years to properly manage the resources. I mean, astronomical sums of money have come out of the ground in the form of oil for Alaskans over the decades. And as elected officials over those decades, I believe we have failed the people of Alaska to properly manage those resources and those funds. We're only here sitting today talking about the permanent fund because the people of Alaska put it in the Constitution. And quite frankly, if there was no dividend tie to it, I don't think we would even have a fund today to talk about this. So I'm going to end by saying, you know, you and I talked, Madam Chair, I've talked with a lot of members in the committee. You pretty much know where I stand on the bill. I didn't offer any amendments because it would have been just amendments, and there was no point in doing that. But I would say, I'll end it with this. This alone does not solve the problem. I think in some respects it's probably going to create some problems. I understand why it's happening. But as we move forward, I sure hope the administration and I sure hope the House works with us in reducing. I'm looking forward to more of the fines we're hearing about on the slope, Horseshoe, Kalis, Conoco. When we were told we were done with oil, it's obvious we're not. And I think if we set up an environment in this state in which industries, when they're looking to invest all over the world, it would be my goal, and I'm sure the goal of others at this committee, that when they think of a place to invest, that Alaska is at the top of that list. And the only way we're going to get there is if we control our expenditures, we hem in our expenditures, and we don't behave as a predatory tax regime like other places do, which I'm afraid some want to point us in the direction of. And I just hope we can avoid that, Madam Chair. So with that, I remove my objection.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. I'm going to object that we have people that were wanting to speak. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The people of Alaska for the last several years have been looking toward the legislature to come up with a fiscal solution. We've heard many, many times that we need to make the tough decisions. You know, there's been some discussion about asking the people to vote, but we are the elected officials, and this is a very difficult vote, but it is part of a fiscal solution, probably the biggest piece of that solution. We still are going to be looking at least in the Senate's viewpoint, additional belt tightening. Call it cuts, as Senator Dunleavy says, but I have one vote, and I think that the vote that I take on this particular piece of legislation and the vote on the floor will assure a more solid future for the state of Alaska, will protect the permanent fund, and will protect the permanent fund dividend. Inaction is not a solution, is not an option. And we need to take the next step to address the fiscal cliff that the state of Alaska is facing today. Unless we do so, we're putting not only the dividend, but the future of Alaska in jeopardy. And that is why I'm going to make the difficult decision for the people that sent me down here and will be voting yes on this one big part of the fiscal solution.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just like to just, I could talk for 20 minutes, but we got to go. But I'm just going to sum this up real quick for right at the moment. I'm all about protecting the dividend. I could say, Commissioner, how many people called your office when they got a $300 dividend and complained that it was only $300? And how many complained when it was $500 and $800? But now it's going to be $1,000, something they can bank on this year, the next year, and into the third year. And then after that, it depends on how this fund is doing, and after we've had a look back, there's some continuity and some consistency with a $1,000 dividend. And I'm hoping that by having this continuity and consistency with this bill, that they've still got a job to go out and buy that that four-wheeler and have the job to pay for that four-wheeler to help our economy overall. Thank you.
Senator Michikian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few comments. You know, I when this started, people, you hear folks talking about us raiding the permanent fund just a few comments on that. You know, I came into office 4 years ago, and when I ran, the last thing that I thought, the last position I thought I would find myself in is that we were going to be at this point. And some folks say it's the easiest choice. There's nothing easy about this choice, Madam Chair. I demand protection for the permanent fund, and I demand protection for a perpetual permanent fund dividend program. I demand it. I have four children. It's been extremely important. I know many low-income folks that saved enough over that 18 years of their child's lives to send them to the university. Using our reserves right now, the earnings off of our reserves is much like that college account. With a college account, you save for a point in time when those funds will be needed, and then you use them. Use them sparingly, and you make sure that you continue to protect the perpetuity of that fund. And I tell you, I mean, some people say we're not listening to Alaskans. In my district, I held 32 public meetings. You were there for a couple of them. I held many others. And I ran three surveys. They required a unique identifier, so they knew they were District O people. And it was 60-40 in support. Their most favorite option, understanding the gap, was that we used our earnings and reduced part of their permanent fund until we get through this. Their least favorite option was an income tax. And I think about what we do here. What is the only reason we're here? The only reason we're here is to provide services to Alaskans at as reasonable cost as we possibly can. So I think about this little blue book. Can anyone look me in the eye and tell me that we're meeting our constitutional requirements today on delivering public safety in Alaska? So number one complaint I get, there are not enough troopers on the streets to deal with this opioid crisis. There are parts in western Alaska that simply have to wait days for a response from the troopers. And we have cut substantially. Since the day I got here, we've cut 44.6%. If you include operating and capital, we've cut 26% out of the operating budget. We're going to work on cutting more. Personally, I've had the HESP budget. We've cut $200 million out of that single budget. We're going to cut another 40 this year. I mean, we've worked hard to streamline our government, still continue to deliver services that are needed. But you get into a significantly deeper level of cuts, and I tell you, you're going to look seniors in the eye that no longer can count on the basic services, or 50 kids in a classroom, or not having someone respond when your family is in a vehicle on its side on the Sterling Highway and the nearest trooper's 2 hours away. I mean, these are basic, constitutionally required services as important as the permanent fund, and I will fight to protect all of them. But there are some important things about this bill. When I talk about the perpetual protection of the permanent fund and the permanent fund program, this bill delivers the highest number, the highest level permanent fund end-of-year balance in 2026. It will have $70 million, of course. It's all apples to apples. We know we're going to be wrong. But it delivers the highest level of permanent fund end-of-year balance, $70 billion, as opposed to a status quo of 61. So we are protecting the fund. We are ensuring a perpetual dividend. And, you know, there are some exciting announcements. This does not completely solve the problem. I think everyone understands that. Perhaps. if we get an increase in the price of oil by a couple of bucks a barrel, it's not a huge gap anymore. We actually could meet it that way. If we get additional cuts, it could be an absolute solution. If Repsol and Conoco and Kalis's new discoveries come online, we will absolutely meet that gap. I also read an article yesterday that the source rocks for non-conventional production on the slope have enormous potential. We've known about that. We've got new players that are interested in those possibilities. So I just want to remind folks that the reason for the permanent fund is to take today's revenues and hold them in perpetuity for tomorrow's generations. And the reason for the dividend is distributing a portion of the state's wealth to Alaskans, encouraging people to stay in Alaska, and encouraging awareness and involvement by Alaskans in the management and use of the permanent fund. This comes from the permanent fund division's publication. And I will tell you, Madam Chair, just in wrap up, I arrived here in 1982. But as Mayor Soldat and I built the first cemetery that we had in the city of Soldat, we didn't have a cemetery. One of the things I thought about is that the Machikis will have an eternal home, if you will. We're not leaving. This is our state. We are absolutely fully invested, and I'm take this leadership opportunity on being down in Juneau as an absolute honor, but there's nothing easy about this decision. Leadership is not easy. It's about being the most informed on a subject and being able to go home and look your constituents in the eye, explain to them why you voted a certain way. The reason I'm voting a certain way is to absolutely protect the permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend program into perpetuity. And don't like to talk for very long, Madam Chair. I appreciate just a moment to say that, but I think folks need to hear that the legislature, although they have overspent at times before some of us arrived, the reality of it is without constitutional protection, without statutory protection, they have overfunded the permanent fund and have protected it, as Senator Hoffman says. Instead of a spending spree when they had the greatest amount of money, they went on a saving spree. And that is why the fund's in the position it's in today.
Further comments? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the gentleman across me that talked about the cuts and the adverse attitude toward any kind of broad-based tax, all I can say is we have had experts sitting at the table over there telling us we cannot, no matter what we do, cannot. If we cut 100%, we can never cut our way out of the issue, out of the problem that we are in. And as I look back in the 50s and the 60s when I was a kid, one of the biggest impediments for statehood was the attitude from our big brother in Washington, big brothers in Washington, D.C., was that Alaska couldn't afford to be on its own without their, and that they couldn't afford even an income tax. Well, I think history has shown them to be maybe a little bit off. And as we go on, one of the comments was made is some people thinks that rural Alaska is not paying its fair share. When you realize that rural Alaska is where all the resources come from, and look at some of the communities out there where, because of the cuts, things like water and sewer projects have been put on hold. Basic utilities are not available. People are resigned to go back to the honey bucket. When I'm over here in Juneau, I got three bathrooms I can go to and flush the toilet, and I don't see whatever happens to it after that. In communities that I represent, we have health issues out there because of the inadequate treatment of sewage that's there. Going on to education, in the community that I come from, we're not going to have Head Start next year. You know, the basic thing that you have in larger communities, we don't have that. Things like public broadcasting is going to be cut. Broadcasting a radio station down here any part of the state of Alaska, except for rural Alaska, you know, public broadcasting is what gives you the severe weather warning, so you're not caught out in adverse conditions where people can go ahead and die of hypothermia. Now we're looking at DOT and the airports possibly being shut down. I'm not talking about the smaller airports in the villages. I'm talking about some of the major airports that are being shut down because of the lack of funding. and their hours being cut back. So with that, Madam Chairman, I'm very concerned about what the path we were going down. Thank you.
Last comments. Senator Dunleavy.
Just briefly. There's no doubt it's difficult. Nobody says it's not. It is difficult. The whole thing is difficult. And nobody wants to cut schools. Nobody wants to cut benefits for seniors. But I have constituents asking me, before you reach in my pocket, who was Rigdon Boykin? And I asked them, what do you mean? $800,000. Who was he? What did he do? I don't really know. I had something to do with the gas line. Do you really want me to, you really want to reach in my pocket, Senator, and grab my money and pay for Rigdon Boykin if you really don't know what he did? What about contributions? There's not a darn thing wrong with the Iditarod. We lived on the Iditarod Trail. I love the Iditarod. But public money going to an advertisement for the Iditarod. Now, these are small potatoes. I get that. And then people will continue the conversation. What about the office in Houston? What about the special assistance to the governor? What about this? What about that? And all my constituents say is, we want to pay for troopers. Absolutely. We want to pay for schools. Absolutely. We want to pay for roads. Absolutely. But you can't look at this other stuff to reduce? And I can't look them in the eye and say, no, we can't. We have to pay Rigdon Boykin $800,000. I think it's difficult. And I'm going to end it with this. It's not an easy process we're going through. I think we're going to get to a stronger Alaska. I really do. But I think our major focus as elected officials really should be to protect the rights and properties, the rights and property of Alaskans. Anyway, I look forward to working with everybody moving forward to solve this fiscal issue.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. With that, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to advancing CS for Senate Bill number 26, Finance/D? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill number 26, Finance, moves from committee. Brief at ease while we sign the documents. We're back on the record. This is Senate Finance. Is there anything else to come before the committee? On Monday's agenda, we'll be hearing SB 63, Regulation of Smoking. With that, we're adjourned.